Right at 1:30. And so I'm calling to order the special court commission meeting for Houston Authority. And we're going to receive a staff update and discussion regarding the updated 10-year long-range capital plan, 5-year mid-range capital plan, and the 1-year capital plan. And so Tom, who's going to?
Well, first Roger's going to.
Well, Roger, thank you.
Just, I think it's good as we continue to evaluate our capital needs going forward, the business changing, and making sure that we stay ahead of the demand curve for all facets of our organization. We continue to do this. I think it's just a good opportunity to lay it out in front of the commission. So okay. I'll turn it over to Tom.
Good.
One of the things when we were talking about moving forward with this this meeting, you know, we've always been very good at 1- and 5-year budgets, but not really going out to, so we kind of did a 10, but not much past that. So what we're going to do today is we've asked, Rich is going to give a brief overview of what we're calling Port Houston 2040. We need to start looking 20 plus years into the future of where we are. Obviously, those are high level discussions, but if we don't start today, we'll never get there. And so after Rich goes through that, just to give you an idea where we're moving to, so that next year, year after, when we have this meeting, we can also have a 20-year discussion. Then Tim's going to talk about the short, the 1 year, and the 5 and the 10, not where we're going to get down into the weeds about each individual project, but more the big picture stuff so that we can look at it. We're looking at it two ways as well that he'll get into in terms of, you know, what are we financially constrained on, and what would we want if we didn't have any constraints in terms of additional projects. Then we're going to talk about just different ways that funding is available in terms of all the different sources, so we can look at that. And the last thing I'm going to say before I turn it over to Rich is, this is a workshop for you guys. So if there's questions that pop up in the middle, please ask them. Don't wait until the end.
In great part, this was driven by commissioner interest and understanding where we are financially, knowing how long
right.
you know, we can go without going to the public for public money.
Right.
So one of the issues with that, as we all know, is that there's a very anti-tax sentiment among the public right now, and some concern among county officials about the port going out for public money. And so I think the commission really needs to understand where we are, how long we think we can work
right.
within the constraints of what we currently have, so that we can figure out, you know, when we should approach the county about going out for another bond campaign.
And
because
Tim,
we have to be very sensitive to yes. the politics as well as our needs. And so I think that that was really what caused us to come together today, so
right.
that we can all understand that and figure out what we need to do moving forward.
And part of Tim's is to show the liquidity and where we are and how long we will stay
right.
positive, as well as, you know, where we think, or why we didn't need to use the $300 million that we went out for, to show you how things have changed just in that time frame. We're going to
sure.
run through that so everybody understands that we just didn't go out and get $300 million without a plan, but our business has changed and become so positive, we haven't needed to use that.
Yeah,
so.
Good. Okay, well, it's good to orient us, and
right.
so let's get started.
So we'll go with Rich.
In the spirit of a workshop, is it okay if I just sit here
Absolutely.
And share a conversation?
You know what, it might be a good idea, just so that we can all see you,
mm-hmm.
saying, do you mind going to the end of the
No, program? No, I certainly don't.
Thank you.
Yeah. So good afternoon, commissioners.
Good afternoon.
So last year,
And we do have the slides.
Welcome, Commissioner Meese, we just got started.
Good.
He's just now getting ready. We just had a very quick orientation about why we're meeting today to talk about our short range and long term.
I could tell.
We were stalling.
Where's Don Carlos? I didn't see his car.
I don't think he could be here today.
So we have the slides, but also they're the same as what's in your book, so.
Page five.
And the story on Port Houston 2040 is three slides, basically. I'm going to talk about the process, the types of questions we're trying to answer with that process, and then give some early ideas about what we're coming up with, but with the caveat that it is very early in this process. Late last year, I spoke before the commission on the topic of visioning, and it was summed up, I think, with a statement along the lines of, the port we have today is a legacy of our past, and the port we're going to have in the future is a legacy of today. So the ownership of the Port Commission, the support for long-term planning is critical, and that's why we're putting together a process for really thinking through the future. So to maintain the port's competitive position as an economic engine for the future, we have to think ahead. And our process is called Port Houston 2040. And you can see through the slide that it is, you know, a fairly straightforward five-step process, but it's iterative, which means we will adjust and update. We don't know exactly how things are going to be 20 years from now, so it has to be a living type of process. But the five steps are straightforward, common sense. The first step is scope the opportunities. Then we evaluate the options for how to capture those opportunities. We select preferred paths. We get approval, and we go ahead and execute. And then, you know, rinse and repeat. We update and renew that process. We have to evaluate a number of factors that are listed on the page. I won't read them all, but not the least of which is, where is the market going for the port? How are we going to match that market with capacity and infrastructure? What is the capital availability for making the kinds of investments that we need? And what are the trends and scenarios that we see going forward? You know, what's happening outside of our port? What's happening in industry? What's happening with technology? What's happening with demographics? Those types of things. It's important to note that the port traditionally has studied individual assets very deeply. So we've had the Bayport Master Plan, we've had the Barber's Cut Rehabilitation Plan, we've had certain studies up here at the Turning Basin. But this process is really, for the first time in a long time, a comprehensive look at the port. So it includes all of the assets, it includes our stewardship, it looks at security plans, environmental plans, and it will include plans for how we evolve as an organization as well. So if you turn to the next slide, we are looking at, you know, key questions that the port faces, and they're along, you know, three buckets. The first is the strategy, mission, and vision to be the driver of regional prosperity and the distribution hub for the next generation. We have to ask, what is the port of the future look like? We have to ask, you know, what is the landscape for competition and collaboration economically, politically, and so forth? We have to ask, what are the major trends and scenarios? The next set of questions, if you could advance the clicker, are questions aligned to our four strategic goals. So growth, infrastructure, stewardship, and people. So growth and infrastructure are flip sides of the same coin, really. So we are going to look at demand and capacity for containers, general cargo, and so forth, freight mobility. We will be looking at outside trends, what's happening in the broader Port of Houston, what's happening with technologies, ship sizes, those types of things. And then what about our core, you know, sort of enabling assets, the ship channel itself, and the highest and best uses for our developable real estate. So those are basically growth and infrastructure questions. And then in terms of stewardship, how are we going to ensure navigation, security, safety, have an environmental leadership strategy? And then how are we going to connect to
the economy. One of the things, ways we measure our effectiveness as a port is economic impact. So how are we going to continue to generate jobs and revenues and so forth? And then finally, if we need new capabilities to develop new markets or new technologies, what are the implications for our organization and our people and the capabilities that they need to have? So there's a fundamental set of questions like that. And then the bottom set of questions is really, when are we going to make certain kinds of investments? What are they going to be and how are we going to pay for that? And Tim is going to talk at length about the money side of the question. So I'll move on to the third slide. Just to give you a little bit of a deep dive in terms of how this process is working, we've structured the planning process to focus on our core planning areas. So those would be the container terminals, for example, the general cargo terminals, bulk terminals, real estate, ship channel, the core assets, and then the community. Currently, the capital plan for those areas adds up to about $2.6 billion. If we have an unconstrained set of eyes looking at the potential of the port, what else could the port do? We see lots of opportunities that are not in the current capital plan. And again, it's early days, but we've provided some examples on the slide. The one is we've coined B3, so beyond Barber's Cut and Bayport. Today, the container operations and the container capacity is enough to handle our market and our growth. But at some point in the future, we're going to need more capacity. So what is that going to be? Additional capacity at Bayport, another terminal, those types of questions. And they could add to our capital plan somewhere between $500 million to $2 billion. If we look at the last 5 years of investment in the container terminals, it's been nearly $1 billion. So there's a big chunk of money out there that is not in the current capital plan. And then if we look at R3, rehab, renew, repurpose general cargo terminals, there is a lot of investment and improvement that we can make that is not in the current capital plan as well. And that could be on the order of $100, $200 million. We really can't be specific about numbers. I'm just trying to give you orders of magnitude. And in bulk terminals, tenants' long-range plans, our bulk operations are leased. So what happens in the future really depends on them. Around real estate, what's the highest and best use for some of our key properties? And then, you know, the ship channel, really one of the most enabling, you know, the reason the port is here, is undergoing a mega study with the Corps of Engineers, where we're really looking at what the future of the ship channel should be in the dredge material areas. And that could be $1 billion, and our share could be several hundred million dollars, which are not in the capital plan as well. So when that study is complete at the end of 2019, we'll understand that more. But these are big dollars that are, you know, if we take an unconstrained pair of eyes, you know, there could be a lot of money at stake. And then connecting to the community in terms of civic partnering, doing things that enhance economic impact, doing the types of things that really enhance our brand and so forth, that could require investments as well. And if I look at the total at a back of the envelope level at the moment, it's $1 to $3 billion additional monies. Now, not all of that has to come from the free cash flow of the port operations. That can come through all of the sources that are available to the port, including public-private partnerships. So now that I've started to talk about money, I think I'll segue over to Tim, unless you have any questions.
I have a question. As it relates to, as you're looking out from a planning standpoint, and let's take the container terminal, for instance, and while we have the capacity right now to handle the business there, what gives you, what do you look at in terms of future needs? So if you say we're doing 2+ million TEUs right now, and we need to expand the container terminal at X,
right,
in order to be able to go to the next level based on, you know, some set of criteria.
Right. So we understand what our capacity is, and we're actually, you know, studying it in a little bit more detail right now to see if we improved operations, could we expand capacity without spending more dollars on infrastructure and that type of thing. But it'd be safe to say that we have about 4.5 million TEUs, maybe 5 million TEUs worth of capacity today, and we're moving 2.4. We're tracking on 2.4 today. We're going to add a lot in the next couple of years with resins. So that'll get us up to 3 very quickly. When you get close to your capacity, you have to start planning, and it takes a few years to actually build and plan. So we have to have a lead time of at least 5 years to expand that capacity. Yes?
But Rich, with the complete build out of Bayport and the sort of the rehabilitation of Barber's Cut,
yes.
What is our total allowable capacity with all of that? Is it 3 million? Is it 4 million?
It's north of 5.
Okay.
And we're actually.
So we have some expansion opportunity currently.
Right, we do.
All right.
And so when we want to get to 6, do we use, you know, unused land at Bayport? Do we?
But sometimes, yeah. You know, technology occurs in the interim that makes it even more efficient, right?
Like, right.
Like we've already done. But with all that said, I'm glad that you're looking at it and I think it's important to be thoughtful. On this list, you know, if you have unlimited resources, you can imagine all kinds of things you'd like to do, right?
Right.
I see Charlie smiling, and Bob kind of talked about that.
Ferraris for the
state. But if you have, everybody has constrained resources at one time or another. And so, kind of working backwards, would you say that, you know, if you're constrained, what are the three key areas to focus on with the funds that you do have for use? It's existing terminals, your channel infrastructure,
right?
And I guess technology innovation to assure that you're the most efficient you can be with your customer service.
Right. Okay. It's our core business, which is the container business, which is the ship channel and associated facilities. And it is innovation so that we can get a bigger bang for an investment dollar.
And my only point is that I think we need to be really careful that we don't get so interested in kind of visioning for the future that we kind of get off track about the core competencies that we have. And I know that all of you are really focusing on that. I really appreciate that. But I think that as we move forward, and we've done great with our, you know, with our revenue streams. We're just doing a fantastic job. Yeah. I just think we need to kind of focus on what we're going to be able to do, because the further we go, I think the less likely it is that we're going to have public officials that are interested in potentially taking a political hit for us to go out for public money. And so I want to know what we're going to be able to do without having to trigger that. Just, you know, just for conversations.
And just so I'm clear, so in your view, to get where we need to be could be as much as $5.6 billion.
Let me just, this is just is kind of number? A big trip.
That's why I'm trying to orient what we're really looking at.
That's a lot of money.
The key plan, you know, the things that we know we have to do for our facility, you know, we're handling 2.4 million TEUs. We have room to expand. These other challenges that we're talking about, hey, what's beyond that capacity that we know about? And these aren't necessarily Port of Houston dollars. These could be freight, you know, initiatives and things that it include more than just our facilities.
And it's 20 years out.
Yeah,
I mean, that's why we're looking at it.
Yeah, my only point was that this is a wish list. And it may not become necessary. That's all. I just didn't want everybody to leave the room thinking we need $5 billion today.
We got
to
think about
what we just need the plans of how we're going to get it when we do need it.
We got to know, have a good idea what it's going to look like in 20 years and start planning for, you know, hey, what's that next container terminal going to be 20 years from now if and when we run out of capacity?
Well, yeah, that was kind of my thing. It's like, okay, if our total capacity is 5 million TEUs, and so, you know, so when we get to 3.5 million TEUs, does that trigger us going into the planning mode for, you know, for further expansion?
I think 2040, you know, it's just, you start planning at a high level now, and it gets more and more refined as you get closer to that.
Yeah.
And but it's along the same lines. We all want to use our existing facilities as much again. Maybe we come up with ways to get more capacity out over the next 20 years better than we know of now.
So to get to the 5+ TEUs, million TEUs, do we have the funds to get to that point?
That's going to be in the first phase of what Tim's going to talk about and what the liquidity to get to that point is.
Good.
And then the second phase is to start down this path, not go this deep, but to start down that path.
The left side, the $2 billion is more or less on our capital plan.
That's correct. Yep.
For
it's on our plan, and we have the money without going out.
No. We're going to go through that. But that's what we kind of identify what we need for the next build out of the current facility.
And the right side
on that is the right side.
And the right side is it's just sort of an order of magnitude to get a sense. It's not just a half a million. A half a billion. It's potentially doubling our existing capital budget.
We could and maybe should have this discussion without dollar amounts. It's just more about the thought process of, hey, we got a plan for what's
being. Yeah, if you think about the last 10 years, we've averaged about $200 million a year spent, right? So in the last 10 years, $2 billion has been spent. In the next 20 years, we'd expect to be spending similar amounts. So this shouldn't be surprising, but what it is what are those options, what are those choices? Do we repurpose particular properties and turn them into more container yard, or do we do something else with them? These types of things. So we're just trying to tee up that this is a big challenge for the port.
It's not going to slow down.
Right. And it's a lot of questions. I will say one more thing, which is the way we're going about this is to involve every part of the port organization. So that includes commercial. It includes operations. It includes IT. We're integrating Port Houston 2040 will include the IT master plan as well, and so forth. And that includes the Port Commission as sponsors and steering for the process. Other ports have outsourced this process entirely to consultants, and then they get a report back. Our approach is to more own it ourselves. We will go out for outside assistance when there's a specific technical question that needs to be answered. But the ownership that we develop by doing this ourselves is going to create more reliable execution and implementation when we decide to make these decisions.
Good.
Thanks, Rich.
Good.
Thanks, sir. So now we'll roll into Tim and start the where are we today portion of the conversation.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Yeah, good afternoon.
Is that what you were waiting on?
It's like a church. You're not sure if the preacher really wants you to respond.
Pretty good.
A quick outline of what we've got. Amen would be good. A few notes and assumptions just that underlie the numbers you're going to see. A quick slide I want to talk about on the objectives of what we do here from a capital planning. I thought it'd be good to show the commission a bridge from what we approved for 2017 in the budget and where we think we are today. Then we'll get into the meat of it, which is the capital plans in some level of detail. Obviously, if you look at container terminals, general cargo, and the channel, you're looking at 90% of our spend. So we'll go a little bit deeper there just until it hurts, and then we'll pull back out. The strategic or incremental projects, I'd like to share a few things with you there, and then we'll conclude looking at funding and liquidity. So page 10 on the notes, a couple of administrative things. Obviously, we'll be back in about 4 months' time to present the 2018 plan for your approval, the 2018 capital plan. Sorry, I forgot I'm my own flipper as well. As well as provide you an overview of the 5-year. The second bullet is a reminder. When we talk in this presentation about available resources and running out of money, quote unquote, that is running out of the ability to award future projects and not necessarily hard, cold cash. An easy example is Wharf, Bayport Wharf 2, we awarded in April or May of 16 for $35 million. Well, we've paid $23 million of that. So in other words, we pulled the $35 million out of the bag. It's no longer available, but the actual cash underneath that trickles out over a year and a half, 2 years' time. So available resources and award is just our ability to award new projects going forward. It'll make sense when we get to liquidity. Okay, more tactically, the capital plans for the container terminals, obviously driven by growth, continued build out with regards to Bayport, and of course recapitalization of the Barber's Cut terminal, all driven by the need for capacity and growth and efficiency. Obviously, the general cargo is largely stems from recapitalization. That's rebuilding these docks and wharves and facilities, and we'll talk about that a little bit more. Liquidity projections tied to the 5-year operating P&L that we looked at, I suppose, this past November. So we need to achieve those financial plans in order to achieve the liquidity projections that you'll see coming up in a few slides. Tom mentioned financially constrained or base plan. You'll see me reference it largely as the base plan. That base plan is simply the capital required to achieve our existing 5-year cargo and operating income statement results. So we need this base plan capital in order to achieve the 5-year plan that we presented back in November. Strategic investments, not a great label. These are incremental projects that would add to that, that represent items that would contribute incrementally to that P&L and to the community and to safety and those kind of things. They're still on the board. They've not been fully vetted and thus added to the base plan. But we'll talk about those in a little more detail. And then as Rich and Tom mentioned, the Master Plan 2040 will really shape and guide this. That's a caveat to say this will change. It will evolve as we get through the master planning process. Okay, slide 11 I think is important just to acknowledge our responsibility here to develop a robust capital plan. All the things we take into account. 5 points along the left, obviously our operating requirements to service our customers, maintain service levels to attract new business. We have responsibilities for the ship channel and our channel partners. With an early mandate of job creation and economic development, obviously that plays and weights into our processes. Timing, we have to have the capacity in place at the right time and on schedule in order to attract new business and to retain business. Stewardship, obviously, is stewards of public liquid resources, cash and monies, as well as physical stewardship of safety and security. And obviously, this is a key component of our financial plan. So all those things are turning underneath the surface as we develop the long-term financial plan and this capital plan as a piece of that. Okay, we'll get into the numbers. This is a slide which, at a high level, takes you from the $73 million capital budget approved in November to what we currently see as our 2017 plan of just over $89 million. A few big moving parts underneath that. The first one are projects that were awarded above our original estimates. These were either existing projects in 2017 that we awarded for additional capacity, i.e. the three RTG cranes that were approved in May, or the ongoing project for the Bayport flare that we approved, I believe, in the first quarter. So that contributed $9 million. A $10 million change is really just timing differences. These were approved dollars in the 2016 budget that moved into the 2017 budget, primarily Bayport Rail, as you see there, for a plus of $13 million. We actually accelerated some rail replacement at the Turning Basin to net that down to about a $10 million addition. Some other additions to the plan of $3 million, some business critical items that we needed to execute this year, the mobile radio communications capability and some work on the Bayport gate operating system as well. We moved some things out. You see a dropped number of just over $6 million, some administrative and support items that we pulled out of that plan, and then other odds and ends projects that also moved out. So that takes you from the 73 that we presented however long ago, 6, 7, 8 months, to where we think we are today at about $89 million on our base capital plan for 2017. Any questions or comments about that? Okay, page 13, your first view of the roll-up of the current five-year and 10-year plans. It's a bunch of little numbers. Forgive me, Commissioner Meese, that's why we have paper there in front of you, because I know it's small numbers. As you can see, at this first subtotal there, the $89 million I mentioned for 2017, you can see how that compiles by the different business and functional owners along the left. We're currently looking at a $904 million five-year plan for, again, for the base capital requirements for the Port Authority, and then the 10-year plan at just under $1.9 billion. That's $1,874 total for the 10-year plan. And then you'll see the strategic investments, the incremental projects we'll talk about coming up in a few minutes. The circles I added there to the right, you'll see just a couple of takeaways for you. Obviously, the container terminals represent 70%+ of our revenue, more like 85% of our cash flow, and they are consuming 70% of our investments. Those are a little bit of apples and oranges, but they should align in some regard as you see the bulk of our capital spend aimed at container terminals. General cargo terminals, 10 or 11% of our capital plans, and then the channel development section. You notice that about midway down, around 11% of our total plan. You can see the $206 million over a 10-year period. The percentages beneath that I wanted to call out. We'll talk about this in more detail when we get to channel development. But around 40% of those dollars directly related to our business and our revenue streams at the Port Authority, and roughly 58 or 60% providing benefit to all Houston Ship Channel partners. So something to remember, and we can talk about in a few minutes more when we get to the detail. Okay, page 14. When you get through the sensory overload at looking at all the numbers and colors, if you let me acclimate you to this, hopefully you'll find it informative. Across the top, of course, the 5 years, 2017 through 2021. 5 years, of course, the summation of those 5 years. The 10-year, then, is a cumulative 10-year look, in this case, for the Bayport Terminal. So those are your columns. Along the left side, coming down, wharf and wharf cranes, container yard and yard cranes, and then a few other operational segments, the gate, container freight station, maintenance, rail, et cetera. So we'll take one as example. If you look at 2019, the $11,850,000 there under wharf, you drop down to the project legend and you can see, oh, that's what's in the $11,850,000. It is the Wharf 6 design and the Wharf 6 dredge make up the $11,850,000. So if you follow the bouncing colors there, the legend is meant to give you the major, the key, if not the total, projects that make up those bigger dollars. 2017, you see we have the Wharf 6 dredge design there coming. We'll continue across. We talked about the $12 million. In 2020, then you see down below that represents the construction of Wharf 6 as well as Wharf 6 cranes and the Wharf 7 dredge design.
So the color relates to the cranes or the container yard, RTGs, or the...
Exactly. So you just, the baby blue, if you will, describes the content of the dollars up above. Again, looking at 2017, we have $2.8 million for container yard and $16,366 million for RTG cranes. And you see that that's the CY7 design for the yard, and those are wharf cranes that we've awarded this year.
So the yellow and the baby blue really are the kind of the meat of the matter.
Yes, that's correct. It just describes the key elements of those big dollars. Okay. So roughly $52 million for 2017 for Bayport, $334 for 5 years, and $663 million over a 10-year plan. Now, if you would open your book just to complete the overload, page 15 gives you a graphical view of that capacity by year. and you can really look at both at the same time. Again, forgive me, I know that's a lot of information. It allows you to see the wharf, that's obviously W. It allows you to see the wharf and the timing of that capacity addition, and then the container yards capacity, and then the other key projects that are on the board for Bayport. I'll let you absorb that for a minute. Any questions on Bayport? Oh, yes. This is the one I was referring to on the that's in your book on page 15. Thank you, Eric. Again, where you can see the timing of the various additions for capital. Any questions on Bayport? All right. Page 16, similarly, the view for Barber's Cut. Again, a different story here for Barber's Cut as we look to recapitalize and rehabilitate, if you will, this key container terminal, this 40-year-old terminal, as you know. The large investments there across the container yard and yard cranes as we look to make those container yards more efficient, increase our capacity there. So much of that yard was built for wheeled containers, and this will take this to 18-inch concrete able to withstand loaded boxes throughout. An $8 million plan in 17, largely Wharf 3 design and gate expansion design, as you see there in the 2017 column in colors. For the 5-year, $300 million as we award Wharf 3 in 2018 and Wharf 4 in 2020. You see container yards in the light blue across 2018, 19, et cetera, all the way across. An investment of around $250 million for yard and yard cranes. Gate and related infrastructure is just that. That's to upgrade and update and build new gate infrastructure for that terminal. Obviously, having picked up the APM volumes and activities, needing new gate infrastructure for Barber's Cut. I will call out midway down through the page, you see BCT maintenance, about in the middle there for 2019. As we reconfigure that terminal, we'll need to push that maintenance building to the east. So we'll need to build a new maintenance building in order to make room for the revenue generating containers. And the maintenance folks who keep that running. So there's a new maintenance building in 2019. I'll call attention to one other thing.
Paulo doesn't move it off this list because he seems to do that all the time.
Paulo can't keep it on the list. Is he here to defend himself?
No. That's a running joke that's been on this list for about 15 years
that's
now.
It just keeps
moving.
I will call attention to the $10,200,000 in 2021. That represents our share of the flyovers at BCT connecting to 146. So that assumes a portion that we would pay matched with TxDOT contributing to that as well. Next page 17.
Real quick, before we go on to that, just an interesting fact, if you look at the ship-to-shore cranes and the RTG cranes at both facilities, in the next 10 years, we're going to spend about $200 million at each facility for cranes. So about $400 million over the next 10 years on cranes alone.
Replacing and adding on?
Yes, both. Yeah. So replacing some of the ones at Barber's Cut and then adding the new ones at Bayport.
Tim, would you tell me again, where is the flyovers for Barber's Cut?
It's in 2021 in the purple figure there, the $10,200,000.
Okay.
See it down below is flyovers.
You know, to Tom's point, too, the all-in numbers for each facility are pretty darn close as well.
Pretty much.
Yeah, they really are. Yeah, it's a decent balance. You may want to notice as well on the container yard and RTG cranes row up at the top, you see the investment in yards and yet a delay in the investment in RTGs as we maximize the life and the usefulness of the yard cranes that we have today. This is Jeff's commitment, not mine. to ensure we get, you know, we have cranes operating there today, so we will maximize the life of those and then buy cranes as needed. So that's why you see an absence of RTG cranes there with the new yards. Okay. Page 18, very quickly, I think you've seen, at least in numbers, if not in graphical form, these container terminal growth projections. At the top of those first five bars are the annual growth rates. There's certainly potential for additional growth that Ricky and company are in pursuit of from 19 through probably 25 that I didn't want to put on the chart, but this shows you the tremendous growth we've experienced. As Roger has mentioned, we're up about 14% this year alone in TEUs. I don't know that I see that slowing down to 11%. In fact, we may well maintain that rate through the year. But then slowly edging down towards sort of a state GDP, regional GDP growth rate from a financial planning assumption, I should clarify, for the rest of that period. So just something to keep in mind. This, of course, plus recapitalization of Barber's Cut is what drives those capital plans you saw previously. Okay. Page 19, very busy. I will not talk you through all of these, but this is now general cargo. On the left side, you see the various terminals pair through Woodhouse. And then obviously horizontally across there, the investments for each of those terminals. About midway through, you see the turning basin north and south. That's the purple row. That makes up probably 50%. Yes, sir.
I know you left this page, but I want to make that one discussion on the growth. You know, it does get, we talked about this the other day, it does look kind of distorted if you only go back to 15 and see 21, 15, and 11, and that a 4%. But you go back, if you went back the other way for 10 years or so, you know, a 4% average compound annual growth over a long period of time is not a bad assumption to make. I mean, if you,
right.
From year to year, right. You may see these things because we were flat in 2009, you know. But so I don't, we don't want to be too conservative or whatever, but, you know, who knows what the growth rate's going to be in 2028, but you got to continue to adjust as you go along. So this,
that was before we got here.
But I just wanted to make that point. It distorts it if you look at it, you know, the huge growth rates that we had. But I think looking long term, you got to look at it more.
That's exactly right, Roger, because from this, we're planning our cash flow, and so it's a bit more conservative. We have more pressure than that on Ricky Coons and company.
Well, and let me also add one other thing, too, is that we also then go out and validate this on a periodic basis to make sure it continues to be the appropriate.
Yeah.
Okay, Tim, I'm sorry.
No, thank you. That's good. Okay, general cargo is on page 19. Again, a whole lot of information. Forgive me for that. Roughly half of these investments are at the turning basin north and south, around 40 wharves here, and surrounding facilities and rail that all needs to happen within the next 5 to 10 years. These are identified projects we have with regards to needed repairs, safety items, et cetera, et cetera. These are already on the board from an asset management perspective as we look to reinvest and rehabilitate these facilities.
Isn't that what we're doing with Woodhouse now? Basically, yes, trying to bring it up to snuff.
Yep.
And all these docks out here, that's the whole process. It's the start of the asset management to have the assessments, to have to understand what we have so we can do this better.
Right.
Are these numbers exact? No, I would suspect these will go up.
And I thought I heard you say that the turning basin represents about 50% of our general cargo revenue.
This is from the spend.
Oh, the
spending. Capital
okay.
Spend perspective. Right.
If you look at the 5 year, it's 91 million and 48 is turning basin.
So to Tom's point with regards to the asset management and the assessment of that, you may have heard the acronym FECAP. That's Facility Inspection and Condition Assessment Program, FECAP.
See, that's why I don't try to say
it. Never heard that one.
Yeah. It's an excellent acronym. Charlie, thank you. Obviously, a very key element of our asset management strategy, which is just what it says. This is inspection and assessing the condition of these assets. And over the next 3 years, you can see there, we'll be running this assessment against all 139 of our marine assets, around $3 million in our operating budget associated with these assessments that we expect to bring forward for approval of the program sometime later this year. The table calls attention, really the highlighted item on the bottom, turning basin north and south. I think you'll know these when I read them to you, but we have around 38 wharves in the turning basin north and south, the oldest of which was built in 1915, and the newest dock placed in service in 1984. So we have an age range there of from 33 years to 102 years old facility. Thus, the average dock is around 70 years old that we're talking about here. The point there is twofold. A, as we get into these assessments over the next 3 years, much like Master Planning 2040, this will change the complexion of what we need to spend and where we need to spend it. We'll do obviously the business case analysis to ensure we're doing what we need to do at the right time associated with revenue streams or customers or partners on the ship channel. But these numbers will evolve as we get through that assessment program over the next couple of years. Any questions on the general cargo? All right, page 21. Channel development. Again, quite a few numbers. Forgive me on this page. What you see is two subtotals along the left. You see the subtotal PHA. So that represents a largely berth maintenance dredging projects that will benefit our berths and thus our revenue streams along the top. You see that's around $40 million over a five-year period and two times that, $84 million over 10 years, and then some other projects.
Why would it be two times and it double up the money?
Well, those...
You know, the longer you go, the higher the prices always go in it.
Well,
what you can do today, you can't do for tomorrow. You've got more money. Like to me you've taken that into
consideration. This is constant dollars, so we could raise that. And as you know, those schemes go every either 2 years or every 3 years, and they just cycle through. So it's a good point, Commissioner. We'll look at that.
When we look in the revenue side of it, as you compare this, we don't add in a cost of living or to the revenue side. So we kind of try to keep it
constant dollars. So then the bottom half of this page, if you will, are a subtotal of the Houston Ship Channel projects, or more specifically, as it's stated in the footnote, these projects will benefit all users of the channel or channels and not solely a PHA revenue stream, for instance. The most extreme example would be the Bayport Ship Channel and the change order that was approved this year for $3 million. Well, clearly, the container terminal benefits from that, but we have other partners. Yes.
Yes.
We have other partners both in that ship channel and otherwise.
If the ships won't come, then we're not going to have it.
Right. So we believe that this belongs in the pile that benefits the users of the Bayport ship channel, if not the broader Houston ship channel, et cetera, et cetera. Now, a couple of key points. You see about in the middle of the page the 45-foot channel extension. I believe Rich mentioned this. This is a current study that is going, that we have around $45 million, $46 million in the back half, in other words, 2022 through 2026, for two extensions of the 45-foot depth up to, I believe, is that to Beltway 8 or to the 610 bridge? 610. So that is comprehended in this plan. But Rich also mentioned, which is the asterisk, a much broader study looking at deepening and widening of the entire Houston Ship Channel. It could well be in the billions of dollars. Our share could be $400 million or greater, not comprehended in these plans. So keep that in mind. Should they come back and we agree that this is a need, this would be
incremental. Well, but that would be a great example of something that... the public would certainly support public money for the purpose of the ship channel, because that benefits everybody.
Could be more if old Ryan bid it, I guess.
No, the bid will be less, but the ultimate will be more.
And the lawsuit.
There's 50 million or so, or close to it, in the next 5 years that really is for the greater good.
Thank you for stopping
Houston me. Houston Ship Channel, plus whatever this cost share might be when this study, and we've had bonds in the past where monies went for that greater good that I don't. You know, we just need to make sure that we're highlighting what that money is being used for.
Well, the deepening and widening of 45 was its own bond issue.
I remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, a lot of money in our program is going forward, for the greater good.
And it was finished, was it 2007?
Five.
2005.
Yep. So we keep that distinction made in our records and can always provide you updates to that, both look back and look forward for your use, because I think it's important that we remember that. Okay, lastly, in this level of detail, a quick look at all other, and I won't spend but just a few minutes on this page. This has our security organization under Captain Woodring, around $23 million over a 10-year period. You can see the composition there and the yellow highlights of some of the bigger pieces that are included in that $23 million. IT, which ties to the master plan. The PCM line is largely construction material testing, CMT, and other contingency dollars. Real estate, you see the blue there in 2018, a placeholder for some potential land purchases, and environmental mitigation of Beltway 8 as we look to potentially develop that property further. And then the other line, totaling $60 million over 10-year, is again a judgment item we have in today for additional asset management projects and additional grant projects that could come to us that have yet to be identified, but we want to make sure we have room in the budget for such projects. So that takes you through the other, this is roughly 10% of our capital plan today. Okay, we'll talk strategic investments quickly here. Again, not a great title for this section. These are, as the words describe, these are incremental projects sort of on the board that have yet to be fully vetted. As we vet these projects and introduce them into the operating budget, we will commit either incremental revenue and cash, or we will be solving a community or other responsibility as we work these projects into the budget. The overview of those is on page 24. Again, to the right, totaling $162 million for 5 years and $383 million over a 10-year period. I'll talk to them very briefly and we'll move on. The Bayport land development is fairly self-explanatory. That represents some estimates in order to largely considering Bayport South and bringing that up to grade, investing in fill dirt and other development items in order to make that commercially viable over time. Beltway 8, similarly development, there's a pipeline relocation that also needs to happen there. That's happening in 2018 along with some design and then a lot of the land work in 2020. The BCT wastewater facility, some of you may be familiar with that topic. There's a study underway to look at the capacity of this runoff and how we at the BCT facility are contributing to that, and should we need to contribute some funds to solve those issues. This will not be strategic. This will be a community solution that we provide here. East Industrial Park, just a very visible and critical asset here at the Turning Basin, road and drainage to make that more attractive economically, if not to the community as well. Similarly, the paving of a general cargo yard facility solves several issues. It solves an air quality issue in the area, certainly makes it more pleasing to the eye. Solves the ongoing dust suppression and asphalting that you guys approve annually, and of course could attract additional cargo. So some money's out there for paving of those facilities. Memorial Tract land development, a strategic item that you do see here, the Turning Basin North, Wharf 33 and 34, that is truly a strategic investment should we decide to build new capacity and new wharfs here at the Turning Basin sometime out in that back half of 10 years. And then lastly, Bayport Auto area, converting that internal, I'm sorry, that entire area to container yard capacity one day, making that a revenue generating asset. So that's all I will say on these incremental projects. The next couple of pages give you a few more words. Though, please,
go. To highlight, those are not anything included in the current plan.
In the current base plan.
We discuss right. $162 million over 5 years and about $383
right.
out there. We're calling above the base plan.
That's right, Roger. So say it again. In order to achieve our base financial plan for the next 5 years, we do not need these strategic incremental projects. But should we decide to grow that further, then there are projects on the board that could contribute incrementally to our long-range financial plan.
Okay.
Okay. I will skip the next couple of pages. They give you a few more words behind each of those projects, not a lot more, but a few more words behind each of those projects. We will continue to evolve those projects over time and work them into a proposed budget to you in some future date.
Is there any way to quantify the income, you know, sort of a what if we did those projects, what would the additional revenue be? Additional job capacity.
That's where the 2040 is going to come in.
Yeah.
Because we're going to start looking at all of those questions.
Okay.
I think, the answer is yes, because before you move forward with any of those, you got to kind of analyze the return and what that, the impact that might be as far as economic impact to the, not only to the port, but for the community as well. But yes, there are ways to look at that. I mean, take any of those, there's a value there
right.
before you go make that.
As the chairman said, that will be a key factor in moving forward
sure.
in terms of, you know, asking for public monies, you know, what that economic impact would, mm-hmm. you know, would ultimately be, you know, on the region.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Okay.
He's not finished.
Oh, go ahead.
Close. So 28, again, I'll just remind you, that's the total roll-up of the base plan, which is the $1,874,000,000, and then when we add in the incremental projects, $2.3 billion. All right, we'll close with a discussion on funding. I know that that is of key interest to this body. First, I thought we would look back.
Wait, one second.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, and maybe if you've answered this question and I missed it, excuse me. But if we had the perfect world tomorrow and we knew we could go out for bond issues, what would be a realistic figure and what would that buy us going for from this day forward?
A realistic figure
that we think we could get approved.
If we could get, say, $500 million in a bond offering, if the county were in favor of us doing that,
where would you
deploy the money? Yeah.
Well, you know, I think as Rich mentioned on our three priorities, clearly capacity at the container terminals and finishing our build out at Bayport and recapitalizing that would be priority one. And the ship channel as our responsibility is too, and then innovation and other things, community projects, et cetera. The dollar amount, as you'll see coming up, is probably in that $300 to $500 million range.
And actually, if you go back to your slide just before on the five-year plan, so you see that there's 641. So if you go to the center column and you see the container terminals 641. Yeah. I mean that aligns pretty closely
with the 5 years.
Yeah.
So where would we be with the 5 million TEU capacity in 5 years? Will we be? I don't think we'll be at that capacity in 5 years.
No, the question is, can we finance it, meet our capacity with our revenue projections without going out for public money?
Can we go to 31?
But let me finish my question.
That was the reason for that question.
The reason I wanted it. I want to know, because I think getting to 5 million TEUs is going to be a long few, longer than 10 years in my opinion. Maybe not. But 5 million TEUs, how much money is it going to take us to have the infrastructure, have the cranes, have the commitment, the equipment to man those terminals?
What we know today, we can build out about very roughly half of that using our own cash flow through, again, 2019 into 2020. But to complete that build out, and assuming that equates to 6 million TEU, we will need incremental financing, be that geo bonds, what have you.
And Tim, just to orient everybody, we thought we were going to run out of money in 2016.
Right.
And then it rolled over to 2017, and that's 2019. So we continue to produce revenue at unexpected levels that have been able to finance our ongoing operations and infrastructure. So I only say that because, you know, we continue to surprise ourselves with what we're able to do with our own resources.
Well, that's right. And there's a lot of drivers. One, I want to make sure I give credit where it's due, which is the operations team with their own technology and our technology team continue to make their operations so much more efficient.
Thank you, Jeff.
Let me speak.
Thank you, Jeff.
but that is contributing to our ability to extend that.
This is a good question. You know, knowing the dollars, and I think you're going to get to the answer to Commissioner Fitzgerald's question. You know, knowing how many dollars it's going to cost, we got to realize the increasing revenues that we're going to make going along to understand what that need's going to be. But I think we have a ballpark highlighted of what that ask might
be. Two more slides.
Okay.
But one thing you got to remember, too, the larger these ships and they're coming, the port's going to lose revenue.
Well, without a deeper channel.
What I'm saying is the larger the ship, the less vessels going to call to Houston. So you potentially could lose revenue for the port.
Less dockage.
Right.
You have more containers.
But you have more containers. That's going to offset your
right.
Yeah.
Revenue.
But anyway, we
if Jeff would stop letting these mergers happen.
No, you're right. But the revenue projections are a part of this overall cash flow need.
Yes. Yes, that was one of those assumptions, Commissioner. I may have gone too fast. Forgive me, which is it. You know, it's tied together. If we hit that volume plan, it generates this much cash, which allows us to live on our own.
You probably said it. I missed it.
No, sir. I may have breezed through it. Okay, very quickly, and I'll close. This is a look back view of the sources of our capital plan over the last 8 years. It's fairly self-explanatory. Really, the punchline is that sometime in 2014, June, July, we expended all of our GO bond fund monies. So from that time forward, you can see the blue is our own operating cash. We've been surviving, quote unquote, on our own cash for the last 3 years, and that will continue for the next three. So here's the proverbial bottom line.
Let me just add one more thing to that. And back to the point of we keep doing better. If you look starting in 12 to 13, look at how that blue has grown far beyond what the previous 3 years were. That's one of the reasons why we're able to postpone our capital, our
Ray Yee and I started in 2010, so that's...
That's it.
Keep going. Okay, the proverbial bottom line, slide 31. So the top row there is our financially constrained, quote unquote, the base plan. Capital plan for the 5 year and 10, and then the available liquidity. So this, based on everything we've talked through in detail, thank you for your patience, we would run out of the ability to award new projects in 2020 based on fulfilling all the needs that you saw previously. If we were to tack on the incremental projects, you see then the A plus B, which would be our combined all-in capital plan. Still, we can, in this analysis, survive until 2020 before additional slash alternative financing would be required to award new projects. I will remind you again, the bottom bullet there, which is the broad study around deepening and widening the Houston Ship Channel, which could easily be $400 million for us, is not included in this analysis.
And that cost share would likely come.
Oh, thank you, Roger.
You know, 22-23 years, so correct. It's looming out there as
yep.
well
yep.
on top of this. The other thing, too, if you're not ready, you know, saying that we're good in 2019 would also limit us if a $100 million property came available for us
right.
to purchase somewhere. You know, that's not included in it. It doesn't give us the flexibility to, you know, to make those types of purchases
right.
or whatever. So,
yeah, I'm gonna talk about that
okay.
coming up just
I'll
a bit.
Shut up, man.
No, you're good. Any questions on this this page? If not, I do want to mention our note purchase program, and Ray, please step in as needed. We approved, this body approved, the $300 million note purchase program. We executed those documents in September 2015. That's set to expire a year from now, roughly in September of 2018. We have not borrowed, we have not had any draws against that facility. A reminder that we pay around $1 million a year to have that money available to us. And then should we draw down on those funds, depending on the actual instrument, we would pay around 2.5% per year on that money. It is short-term money, but it is still available to us. But the table I wanted to call your attention to, Tom mentioned this earlier, once I acclimate you here, it's pretty straightforward, which is on the top left, at the time that we executed the note purchase program, we projected capital spend of around $443 million. But what we've actually spent through June of 17 is $290 million. So that shows you that we freed up $150 million that, you know, 2 years ago we didn't anticipate having. Similarly, the cash flow, at the point we executed that that arrangement, we projected cash flows of $207 million. They've actually been $232, so there's another $25 million that has become available to us. So these are illustrate the reason that we've been able to push off both outside sources of financing, and clearly including using this, essentially this letter of credit, we've been able to, again, rely on our own cash generated from operations.
And have we looked at going around and using revenue bonds?
It's a more expensive way to
I know finance. It's more expensive, but it kind of cuts out having to go to the county, right?
Well, that's true. The trouble is if you ever rely on that, you'll
never get
another
again,
public bond
right.
issuance. And so you've got to be careful about pulling the trigger on something that then you're never able to go back to the public. That's kind of the flex point.
That's the problem.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, one quick question. The grant money seems to really be on the downward trend. What's the future projections on that?
Yeah, we some of that downward trend relates to the source, specifically the program that made it more sizable, which was a lot of Hurricane Ike money is back there. Obviously, some EPA
the fire boats
and largely the Port Security Grant program. Those dollars are out
there.
We got
a $10 million Tiger Grant.
For Wharf 2.
Once you get it once, you're probably not in line again for
now, Rich,
when they cut back the program. And if they
prospects for grants going forward are going to focus in just a couple of areas. One is major big projects through something akin to Fastlane, which has been renamed to Infra.
Why did they rename it? I had just learned it.
Because the administration changed
right, of course.
Changed parties, and so they have to call it their own name, I guess.
You better move on.
And then the other category would be around continuing environmental emissions reduction type of grants. There's the VW money that's coming out, which everybody's trying to get their fingers
the
on.
VW.
And so forth. So those are the two big areas of focus right now.
Okay.
Now, before we leave this topic, we do want to mention that we'll be bringing a proposal to the commission to consider renewal of this line of credit, if you will. We do think it makes a lot of sense. As you saw in the liquidity pages, you know, we are running in a margin of, you know, $5 to $30 million of available money, so we're starting to tag along the bottom a bit. It certainly gives us, buys us some time to continue to refine our approach at a portfolio of financing solutions long term. But then to Roger's or Tom's point, should something unforeseen come to the table and we need, you know, this body decides that it's an appropriate investment, we need that ability to react. Could be a channel responsibility, could be a business opportunity. So we think there's a lot of a good logic to renew this program, albeit perhaps at a lower dollar amount, yes, which will help us because obviously the interest rates have crept up a bit over 2 years, not a lot. So it will be a little bit more expensive money to hold on to, but we think we can have a business case for you to consider that. The kicker there is that in order to work through that, we'll probably need to come back in September, October to gain your approval to pursue that. Ray, anything to add,
you know,
please?
Generally speaking, you want to start the discussions with the bank group at least 1 year prior to the expiration of the facility, because then you can gauge who wants to remain.
So when does
we have
expire?
A group of six, September of 2018. So September 2017, we'll probably start the discussions with the bank group.
We won't do it for $300 million this time.
So we can
remember that we did that again, not for cash, but to be
just
able to encumber again,
right.
So that the projects could continue to be approved by this body, so that we can keep moving forward.
The growth was fixed to face when we did
Right.
That's right.
We didn't need to use it.
Okay, very quickly, almost done. A very quick chart. Just
hang on,
to say, yes, sir.
Finish your chart. Go ahead. Finish.
Well, this simply is an overview of the tools and the toolkit. These are potential funding sources, those alternative sources we continue to refer to. Obviously, our cash flow and pursuit of grants, as Rich just mentioned. The next set down are largely short-term tools, whether that's equipment financing or line of credit, note purchase programs such as we have in place today. Longer term, you have tax bonds, revenue bonds, as Commissioner Branch brought to us. The state funding programs, as you know, in this past legislative session, there was a particular bill, and forgive me, I did not double check on the status, but I think it was Senate Bill 28, which approved a program, albeit they haven't put any money in that as of yet, and it was $40 million. There's not a lot we can do, but we would certainly pursue it if it was applicable to us. And then P3 is always on the table if we find the right project and development opportunity to partner with outsiders in pursuit of. Okay.
Another.
Our argument on state funding is outside the gate, just so that everybody knows,
right,
because we were so careful to assure that we weren't trying to put infrastructure inside our gates out of fear that then the state's going to regulate us even more than they already do.
Yeah,
secondly, we would like to see those state dollars utilized for freight transportation that benefits all ports.
Good. Thank you.
Another concern with it jumping too deep into the revenue bond subject is we have a basic idea of what we could get, and that's about 5 years worth of construction. Then we're stuck for the next 25 years of not being able to go get any more credit. So that's another issue with
capacity.
We're not the county who has an unlimited amount because they just keep taxing people. Ours would come directly off of our revenue, so we would have an issue in that.
Let me mention something else, though, in the P3 area. I mean, where the opportunity arises, we let our lessees put in infrastructure. And so sometimes long-term leases come to this commission, and the quid pro quo, so to speak, or one of the pieces of it, is that they are going to be putting in them. It's happening at Bayport Terminal as we speak. There's a piece of infrastructure being put in by one of our tenants. that's going to have not only a benefit for them, but a benefit, you know, and lease revenue for us, but also a benefit for the terminal. So that's something we will be doing. It's not fancy with a P3 name, but it's part of what we do, and it doesn't really hit our bottom line, but it's happening, and it's important.
It really is. It really is. Small P. Okay, last slide. So our continued focus, as we've done over the last several years, we will continue to work our cash flows internally. That's pursuing growth. Certainly the continued efficiency gains within our operations and managing our internal overhead spending such that we're generating the optimum, maximum amount of cash to reinvest in the business. That's our responsibility to you. Clearly, pursuit of grant programs and other similar funding arrangements, and aligning projects to fit those programs as they've been defined, and how we can make our program fit and then obtain funds for such. Obviously, tightening our belts and sharpening our pencils with regards to governance internally of our capital projects. That's ensuring we're prioritizing appropriately, we're making trade-offs, living within our means as best possible. Again, not turning our back on growth opportunities and community responsibility stakeholders, yet ensuring that we have tight governance around our capital projects. Obviously, analyzing and prioritizing our financing sources, as we looked at those tools just a minute ago. And then both to this body and other interested parties, ensuring visibility to our plans and what liquidity looks like, coming back as frequently as you guys, as you would like to have, in ensuring that visibility to our plans. That's our responsibility, and we'll take care of that. Okay, Commissioner Fitzgerald.
Yeah, Chairman, let me ask you a question. You've served on this board for many, many years. I guess you served through two bond issues. I know one.
One.
Okay. So in your opinion, would this port be today where it's at had we not had those bond issues?
Absolutely not. Absolutely.
Well, I guess what's concerning to me is what's changed that, because I would assume back then in 99 and 2007, the port's revenues were obviously growing because the container movement was coming into Houston in big times. So what's changed? But what's changed today from then that maybe we won't be the port that we can be if we don't have bond issues?
And I think that you make a really good point. All I'm saying is that because we built Bayport,
okay,
we have generated significantly more revenue than we anticipated over time.
Agreed.
And even much more than we anticipated 2 years ago. And so we continue to exceed our own expectations about the revenue we're generating. As a result of that, we're able to defer going out for a public bond issuance for an additional period of time. That doesn't mean we don't need to do it. It's just a question of the timing. And when is the best time for us to go to the county and get them on board for a bond issue? So that's really the only question. We will need to go out for public bond.
Well, I think also not only the county, but we need to talk to all of our partners, the cities and the little
small towns.
Well,
of course. No, I didn't mean to.
No, I know that. I know.
My only point is that we got to get the county on board because we're under their umbrella. And so
it has
to do with making sure that all the city of Houston and the county and the people that vote.
No, you're right. Well, here's my concern. What if we wait 2 more years and then all of a sudden we wake up one time and we're in a bind, then where we go from there?
Well, I think that's the reason for this capital planning workshop is we're trying to assure that we don't get in a bind.
Okay.
And we want everybody to be oriented and to know where we are. And everybody here is planning as far ahead as possible so that doesn't happen.
Well, I can see that. It's good planning.
And so I think our staff is going to come to us and say, when we're 2 to 3 years out, and say, we really need to go ahead and pull the trigger on this because we're going to need some additional capital in X year that we cannot generate from our own revenue. So,
well, if we missed 18 and we normally go out during an election year, we're talking 2020 before we could even consider going out. Am I right in what I'm saying?
You usually go on an odd year.
Huh?
You usually go on an odd year.
But we do usually go on an odd year?
It makes 19.
99, 07.
Okay. All right.
2005 or what was it? Yeah,
19.
So the 19 question.
The next
19 would be the next one.
But the question is, I mean,
but 18 is federal.
20. 19 is a city.
city.
There's federal elections next year, right? Congressman, senators. Yeah.
I mean, we can do it. We can even do it at a time when there isn't another election.
Yeah.
We can, you know, call a special election, and that way you get the people that are really for you or against you. And that can sometimes be dangerous. So it requires a lot of careful thought and planning. And you make a very good point. But don't think anybody in this room is saying we don't need to worry about going out for public bonds anymore, because that's just not true.
Yeah. No, I agree. But I'm just afraid we might wait too late. Because here's my fear. These ships are getting bigger, obviously. And if we're not able to get those big ships in here and have the cranes and the machines and technology to service them, if them big ships go to our competing ports, the cargo is going to move there. So instead of generating cargo, we could be losing cargo if we're not able to compete with Savannah, Charleston, the Florida ports.
Well, that's a different issue, because I think that's a deep water issue and not a capacity
issue. We haven't really discussed that.
We have plenty of capacity for handling. Well,
but I'm talking about cranes, buying this modern day equipment.
We've got to
keep doing that.
We have them, or we're doing that.
I don't think we have enough yet, but we are doing it. There's no question about it.
All right. Well, somebody needs to let us know if we're not staying abreast of equipment needs.
So, Chairman, my question is, so our long-term plan is to be comfortable at 45 feet? Is that, that's kind of what I'm gathering from this?
No, I don't think that. I think the long-term plan is to get the mega study done as rapidly as possible so that we can go to 50 or 55 feet.
All right. But then that's going to cost us $400 million to participate in that. Is that right? Or not that much?
Not the study.
No. Okay. If the study reflects the return on investment, which I'm confident it will, and the feds agree that we should go to 50 or 55 feet, then they put a number on what it's going to cost. Say it's $5 billion, whatever our share of that is.
Could be 400.
Then that's a great reason to go out for public money.
So
we shouldn't necessarily wait.
But then the other side of that is whether or not the money is going to be available from the federal side to move forward with.
Yeah.
Which.
Oh, that's true too.
Chances are.
That trend line, just as I pointed out earlier, is not looking too good right now.
Right. Exactly.
So, from our needs, I mean, you made the point is when do we go? You know, how much do we go? You know, what I think you were asked the question earlier, what kind of dollar and how far does that get us or whatever?
Can I make one other point?
Yeah.
As a corollary to that, the other thing is you don't want to pull the trigger too soon for a low amount, because then if it turns out you need $500 million later on, you've already gone out for your bond issuance, you went out too soon, and you can't do it again. So we just got to be careful that the timing and the amount of the request is what we think we need for the foreseeable future.
I agree with you on what you just said. I also agree with what you said earlier about getting the county and the city and everybody on board. And I think part of that is, I think it should be our responsibility. Certainly, I think Clyde and I feel it's our responsibility to keep our guys at the county informed about where we are. And what we've discussed today, staff, great job.
Yeah.
It was enormously helpful to me and my own understanding of where we are and when we're going to run out of money and all that kind of thing. So it was very useful information.
I think the bottom line is...
So I think that we need to educate the people at the county that will ultimately have to approve it. I guess we don't have to make a specific request to them right at the moment, but to tell them where we are, I think it's important that they know where we are and where we're headed.
We should do that with the county, with the
city,
and
the
other
they need to be informed that we're somewhere in the future we're going to have one, and we want you to know that.
And we've been working hard. The port has worked hard. Our operations guys have worked hard.
Get them on our side for we.
And
also, don't push that.
We're
too
pushing
much
it out some, big. but ultimately we're going to have to go.
Yeah.
So that gets big.
Yeah. I guess the county's the big worry since they're. But I think once we go to them, we should start moving around to everybody. We're anticipating that we may have to have one.
You know, a point worth making in terms of what Commissioner Fitzgerald was saying is that we have to continue to be proactive to not only hold on to the business, but to grow the business.
That's right.
And I think one of the arguments that I always thought was the most convincing on the public funds, it allows us to best leverage our own cash flow. Because if we have to do, we can get financing in other ways, we have to pay interest, which means that some of our cash flow goes to the cost of financing, and therefore we can't keep up with the needs for the capital investment. So the argument that I always thought was the most convincing was this allows us to best leverage our own funding and the public funds to keep growing for the benefit of the whole region. And so I would emphasize that kind of a thing. It's a small increment in the tax. And granted, Chairman Longoria is exactly right. The tax sentiment has changed a whole lot in 10 years. But I still think given the small dollars involved, it really has a big, big benefits. And you see those tax numbers that we tell people that we bring in every year.
But you know one thing about it? Of all the taxing entities around, we're the only ones that really bring investment back to the community.
And
am I right?
That's right.
Not only that, but the cost of our infrastructure, if you look at the tax bill, is de minimis.
Oh, of course.
It's like 2 cents.
Less
and we provide the biggest return on investment for the funds that are paid by the taxpayer on their bill.
And our tax rate has been decreasing.
Correct.
Oh, yes.
Anyway, it's frustrating.
Yeah. But I think you're looking, if you asked me today what number, it'd be between 400 and 600 million.
And that would get us 400 and 600 million.
That would get us
through
at least beyond 10 years.
On the next
that's what we really need to look at.
With the caveat, that does not include we would have to turn around sometime. No, it wouldn't include our share
of dredging.
Right.
Of the deepening and widening, or whatever
the improvements, and we'll talk about 50, 55 feet or whatever. We're looking at a lot of different improvements, mainly widening. We're also taking the peek behind the curtain of how deep we need to go. I'm not so sure we need to go to 50 or 55, but the point is we're going to have a share of that sometime. Maybe. If the study's approved in 19, when does that, get on the list to get funded? And when do we include that amount in there as well? Do you make them separate? Those are decisions we need to make. But I think what you're saying is we need to be intentional about, with awareness with a community of, hey, we're gonna need some money. We're looking at date X, and we start building toward that. Is that what you're trying to say?
Yeah,
and when we have met with the county on the potential opportunity to go out for public money, and Tom knows this better than anybody, I'll let him speak to it. But we go talk with Bill Jackson or whoever it is that's running those numbers. The pushback always is that there's not enough capacity with the current amount of public funding that's currently out and being serviced. For the county to allow any additional capacity without having to raise the tax bill to the taxpayer. And they are just really leery. I'll let you, describe the conversation, Tom, but that's always the rub.
We're part of their 63 cents. I'm just going to use a round number. So when you get a tax bill, you see the total for Harris County is 63 cents. Our 1.3 whatever cents is in that 63 cents. So when we go out, if ours increases, they have to decrease what they take because they don't want to make that number any higher than 63. So their response is right now they don't have any more capacity.
They have
it all worked out for their 800 million throughout the years moving forward. Every time there's available funds, they'll sell bonds to go up to that 63 cents. So if all of a sudden we came in and we were going to be another penny, I'll say, that means they either can't sell what they were going to sell of the 800, or they have to decrease their other operating costs by that penny.
Or increase overall taxes.
Right. Which they don't want to
do. And so I have been told that, they went out for a bond election a year ago. And for what was it, 300 million or something?
No, 800.
They have not rolled any of that out because it would require the increase in the tax bill to their constituents, and so they haven't even rolled any of that out, much less to want to give us additional capacity.
But
that's the rub, just so that you understand the complexity of it.
But let me add something. This idea that we're part of their tax rate is in their head.
It's just a math. It's just
the way they think.
It's just math.
Yeah.
Because for all purposes, we are not part of the county. They are just under the statute, the people who have to call the election and authorize the bonds.
Eric, perception is reality.
I agree, but I just wanted to make it clear that that's a perception.
But as long as we're in their 63 cents, they're going to use that.
Right, but I mean, to your point, the tax bill, I mean, you know, you look at your tax bill, it's Harris County, it's flood control, it's the hospital district, and then we're way down there as a separate entity.
No, we're right in the middle of that 63 cents.
Yeah.
Not my bill.
My bill does. Now, I live in the city of Webster, and Harris County collects it. And the city of Webster is its own line. So we need to become our own line and get out of their 63 cents.
Well, and we talked about
that.
But they still feel like from the standpoint, their capacity, they still look at it in terms of we can't increase the gross tax bill to the taxpayer.
Right.
I'm not saying it's insurmountable. I don't think anything's insurmountable. I just wanted to let you know about the complexity of it.
I think Commissioner Kennedy's right. We owe it to them to tell them exactly where we stand and what our future looks like.
And I'm definitely going to take Eric Erickson with me to Commissioner Raddick's office.
It would be my pleasure to be with you and to be with Fisher.
Raddick may be the easiest of one.
Yeah,
Raddick. No, actually, Emmett is the easiest.
No, I know.
No, he said he will never approve another bond election. He wants us to go out for revenue bonds.
But recall, too, this is the same thing we heard in 2005.
Yes.
That's true.
So
they changed their minds.
It was a process that was undertaken by you and your colleagues in 2005 and 2006. And we got there.
And we have worked up the game plan. Charlie has worked up the game plan of what we did the last election, so we understand and can sit down when we get to that point of all the different steps that were taken in the last one so that you guys can all understand what's expected out of different people.
Well, and frankly, I think that we need to roll out a public service campaign like we had a few years ago that really educates the public about our benefits because they forget about us over time.
And if you remember a couple months
ago, Roger and the staff are working on that.
Yeah, a couple months ago, you approved us to go out for an RFQ, I guess, RFP to look at producing a couple 30-second commercials. Right. That's the start of that process.
I'm talking about like when we had to deliver
the
goods.
Something similar to that.
Yeah.
And I think staff can do a good job of articulating what the return on the investment is that our taxpayers are going to make. Tell them what they're going to get
in return
for the money that they pay, that small amount of money is on their tax.
Small.
We have a story. We just got to get it to them. We have a story.
Yeah. Give us another penny
and a half. Not all of the bonds, but I believe there was one bonds where we publicly said that, hey, this is going to raise your taxes by one penny or something. I don't know.
It said that?
And then it was never done.
But it was never done.
Oh, okay.
The county never raised, they rolled it all in and never raised the overall tax rate. But we've been prepared to go out and say, hey, we want to do this, and it's going to raise your taxes by, you know.
And that's something else worth commenting on. When we did the 07 one, it's a very careful process to make sure that the amortization of ours work with the amortizations of theirs so that the tax rate can remain flat or be managed. So
but that's the point.
Yeah.
And that's what Tom and I were discussing before. There are... Anyway,
I don't think we ought to make a commitment to the public that this is not going to raise their taxes.
Well, you guys,
because that's exactly what the county did. That's kind of
made it impossible for them to use the money.
Right.
You've got Metro getting ready to go out for a bond election. You got the city of Houston getting ready to go out for bonds. And
how about the firefighter?
And
their raises? Isn't it on the ballot? Or did they get on the ballot?
Maybe it's not a bond. But the city's going to do bonds. for the pension.
Yeah.
For the pension.
Right, debt. Right, right. Okay.
We might not want to go at the same time.
No, I we definitely
definitely we're not. Not
but then HISD is
going to be ready.
Is now in the process of looking at doing a $2.5 billion bond.
Next.
Again.
Who is?
HISD.
Because they handled the last one so well?
Yeah, exactly. So I don't think we need to be ashamed of or scared to go out for bonds, because everybody's queuing up right now. So now again, we don't need to go with, you know, I agree with the chairman. We don't need to go with.
We've got a good story to tell.
Yes.
We got the best story in the county. It's just a matter of.
And further to that, I know what we heard, you know, from the judge and others about staying close to their people at the county. And you know, Tim's staying very close. His group is staying close to their group. And
okay, so can we ask Tom and Tim to please figure out where the county is with the capacity issue, just so that we're oriented to that?
Yes.
And we'll figure out a plan to go lay this out for all of our elected officials, so that they know where we are when we're going to need money.
And we've had him out here very recently. For the first time ever at the port, and spent most of the day, I think, kind of really got a better picture of what it is we're doing versus from afar. You know, those kind of relationships, I think, are important, and we'll continue to try to build upon those. You know, things that we can do better with them.
That's a good
point. I think it's important.
Well, I really appreciate the job staff has done, and I really was glad to hear that we're doing it in-house. I appreciate that.
And Chairman, I'd like to thank you for calling this meeting. I think it was good for us to get this on the table.
Well, and I want to thank Commissioner Kennedy and all of you for, all of you have been very interested in this topic. And
definitely.
So I'm glad we're all together talking about it. And special thanks to the staff
for
producing an excellent product and for giving us such, I think, a very complete orientation. So thank you.
I'd like to say I really like the Commissioner Courtney's socks.
Let me see.
I do too. They are.
Wow.
You're rubbing off on.
Let me see yours.
He's got to be kind of conservative
kind of
today.
Kind of calm.
They are.
Conservative today.
But you can't find regular socks.
So we go from sell them. So we go from the sublime.
That's all they sell.
This meeting is adjourned.